Translation. Therefore, since these two persons drunk with a liquor named Varuni or Madhvi and unable to control their senses have been blinded by the pride of celestial opulence and have become attached to women, I shall relieve them of their false prestige. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. When a sadhu chastises or punishes someone, he does not do so for revenge. Parikshit Maharaj had inquired why Narad Muni was subject to such a spirit of revenge, tama. But this was not tama, for Narad Muni, in full knowledge of what was for the good of the two brothers, wisely thought of how to cure them. Vaishnavas are good physicians. They know how to protect a person from material disease. Thus, they are never in tamagun. Sagunan samati taitan brahma bhuyaya kalpate. Bhagavad Gita 14:26. Vaishnavas are always situated on the transcendental platform, the Brahman platform. They cannot be subject to mistakes or the influence of the modes of material nature. Whatever they do, after full consideration, is meant just to lead everyone back home, back to Godhead. Therefore, since these two persons, drunk with a liquor named Varuni or Madhvi, and unable to control their senses, have been blinded by the pride of celestial opulence, and have become attached to women, I shall relieve them of their false prestige. So, those of you who have been tuning in regularly to this particular chapter of the 10th canto, Deliverance of the Yamal Arjun Trees, will be aware that these two personalities, Nala Kuvera and Mani Griva, they were the sons of Kuvera, and Kuvera, being very highly situated, he is the treasurer of the demigods. As such, it would be expected that they would conduct their activities in such a way that they wouldn't bring degradation upon either themselves or their exalted family. So, in the purport, Srila Prabhupada is explaining that Maharaj Parikshit had inquired from Shukadev Goswami that why Narada Muni was subject to such a spirit of revenge, because Narada Muni, seeing the two brothers, Nala Kuvera and Mani Griva, sporting in the Ganga, naked and drunk with young women and laughing and singing, Narada Muni happened to be passing, and the young ladies noticed Narada Muni, and they were not as intoxicated, so they immediately tried to cover themselves up. But the two brothers, Nala Kuvera and Mani Griva, although exalted demigods, they were so intoxicated that they were completely unaware of the great sage Devarshi Narad, who was present there. And they continued with their intoxicated activities. So Narada Muni, feeling compassion for the two degraded demigods, he cursed them, and he cursed them to take birth as twin Amal Yarjun trees. And these twin Yamal Arjun trees, they were to appear in the courtyard of Nanda Maharaj. So Maharaj Parikshit is inquiring why was Narada Muni, getting angry, or why was he taking revenge because he was cursing these demigods. But it's explained here that this was not tama, or it wasn't revenge, for Narad Muni is in full knowledge of what is for the good of the two brothers, and he wisely thought how to cure them, you know. And Srila Prabhupada writes here that Vaishnavas are good physicians. So sometimes if we are suffering for some illness, and if we go to see the physician, or if the physician comes to see us, he may prescribe something that might not be very palatable to us. Quite often, when there is some illness or some disease, the physician will give a very strict diet, and he will say, you know, you have to refrain from certain things which are not beneficial for your health. And some of those things may even be things that you like very much. So, and also that sometimes somebody has a serious illness, and the physician has to give some very bitter medicine, and the patient may think, well, you know, the physician is supposed to be my friend, you know, why is he giving me bitter medicine, you know? And stronger than that, somebody, he may have a very life-threatening illness, that the physician will not only give bitter medicine, the physician will take a scalpel and he will cut away parts of that person's body. You know? So in that condition, the patient will think, you know, why is the physician, treating me in that way, you know. Like that. But actually, anybody who knows anything about medicine can understand that actually the physician only has the welfare of the patient, of the person at heart. So he's not thinking that, oh, you know, that person, he wasn't nice to me the other day, so today I'm going to cut him up with my scalpel, you know. I'm going to get him back, you know. So he's not thinking like that. He's thinking, well, the patient is very ill and he's suffering from serious disease, so somehow or other I have to do my best to help that living entity and free him from the suffering condition. And in order to do that, I may have to cause him a little bit of pain to save him from a greater pain later on, you see. So I think they say that sometimes you have to be cruel to be kind, you know, like that. You know? Otherwise, the physician could say, well, okay, you've got cancer or this and that. He said, just go and eat whatever you want, do whatever you want, you know, just enjoy life, you know, because you haven't got long left, you know. He could say that, you know. But then the person will definitely die and in a very short period of time. But the physician says, no. He says, you know, refrain from these activities, stop your smoking and your drinking and so many other things which are not helping you. And you have to take this medicine, and also you have to come and have the disease cut out. You know? So a sadhu, Srila Prabhupada says, a sadhu or a Vaishnava is the best physician, because the material physician is only catering to the material body. Whereas a sadhu, like Devarshi Narad, he is not only catering to the body, but he is more concerned about the spiritual being, the spirit soul that animates that body. And he's thinking, there is Nalakuvera and Manigriva, they're from a very exalted family, and somehow or other they have become so degraded that they cannot even, they don't even know how to act properly. So Srila Prabhupada writes that in Vedic culture it is taught that a basic condition is that people cover at least the lower half of their body, you know? He said, you know, that's kind of basic. And Srila Prabhupada goes on to say that if people cannot even do that, then they're considered no better than animals, you know. So I think in that song, Nittai Pada Kamala, it says, Se Pashu Durachar, you know, like that. So if one has a human body, has taken the human form of life, but he doesn't act according to any spiritual, religious, or moral principles, then he is to be considered no better than an animal. He is known as Dvipad Pashu, you know. You know, animals mostly have four legs, you know, and they are doing whatever they're doing, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. So if the human being who's been endowed with higher intelligence, if he is performing the same activities as an animal, but maybe on a more polished level, you know, then he is known as Dvipad Pashu, you know, two-legged animal, you know. Because the animals, they are sleeping, you know. Like we have a few cats here, sometimes you see them sleeping here or there. And we may sleep on a nice bed or in a nice bunk bed or whatever it is, or a water bed. People spend a lot of money on beds, you know. And they have like, you know, they want to enjoy that sleep. But when they're asleep, they don't know where they are. You know? Like that. And the dog will eat from the dog bowl or will eat from the ground if somebody has thrown some food. But sometimes people go through very elaborate arrangements, you know, with, you know, bone china and then gold cutlery and so many different arrangements just for eating, you know. But the activity is still the same, you know. So eating, sleeping, mating and defending. And a human being, they make so many fancy arrangements for mating, for engaging in sex life. But the animals, they don't have to make so many arrangements. They're also enjoying to the same level, you know. And then the animals are defending with their claws and their teeth, and the human beings are defending with their fighter planes and their nuclear bombs and so many other things, but the activity is still the same on a more polished level. So human life is actually meant for spiritual emancipation, and it's meant for reaching the ultimate goal of life. And this is very, very important. And there's a verse in Bhagavad Gita which is connected with this, chapter 2, verse 44. Many of you probably know it. Bhogishvarya Pashaktanam Taya Parita Chetasam Vyavyas Atmika Buddhi Samadhona Vidhiyate. In the minds of those who are too attached to sense enjoyment and material opulence and who are bewildered by such things, the resolute determination for devotional service to the Supreme Lord does not take place. So we see here that Nalakuvera and Manigriva, they had become bewildered by their material opulence, and because of their attachments, the sense enjoyment, their resolute determination for devotional service was nowhere to be seen. Mm-hmm. Although they were from a very wonderful and pious family. So in the purport of that verse, Srila Prabhupada writes, Samadhi means fixed mind and fixed for self-realization. So he also goes on to say that Samadhi is never possible for persons interested in material sense enjoyments. They are more or less condemned to the process of material energy. Very interesting. So it seems to suggest that if people are too much engrossed in material sense enjoyment and material opulence, that determination for understanding and performing bhakti slips away from them. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I remember for some time I worked as a taxi driver, and I actually got to experience firsthand some of the kind of conditions that people get into when they become intoxicated. You know? Fortunately, in the family that I grew up in, alcohol wasn't a thing that was allowed, so I never had any alcohol. But then one day, as a taxi driver, I got a job to go and pick up somebody from a hotel. This was in Yorkshire. And it was early in the morning, about 9 o'clock in the morning. So this man came out, and he was dressed in a nice suit, you know, looked like a well-dressed gentleman. So he got in the cab, and then I said, where would you like to go? You know? So he said, I'm not sure. You know? So I thought, well, okay, you know. I said, he's a bit different, you know. So I said, well, have you got any idea where you want to go? So he said, he came from Hull, which is another city, to Leeds the night before. And he parked his car somewhere in town. And then he went to a party at some club with his friends. Then he was drinking so much that he said after that he doesn't remember anything. You know? He doesn't remember where he parked his car. And he doesn't remember how he even got back to the hotel. You know? So, you know, I was thinking, well, he seemed well-dressed. He seemed educated. You know, he seemed well-to-do, you know. Materially opulent, but you know, because of taking shelter of intoxication and material enjoyment, he completely lost the plot. You know, and that he didn't. He said, I've got a 7 Series BMW, so it should be easy to find. You know, I said, Leeds is a very big city, so there are many streets. You know, so. I said, maybe I can take you to a clairvoyant, you know, and they can suggest something, you know, like that, you know. Or sometimes you get a call to pick up some people after the nightclubs, you know. After the nightclubs come out, and then someone, you know, comes, gets in the car, and I say, where would you like to go? And they say, take me home. I said, well, where do you live? And they can't remember. So these are the type of conditions that people get themselves into. So the thing is that you know, Srila Prabhupada and all the Vaishnavacharyas, they're teaching us you know, the 4 regulative principles, and they are known as the 4 regulative principles of freedom. You know, and that. Because sometimes people think, oh, if I follow these regulative principles, then, you know, I'll have a very hard life, you know, and I'll have to give up so many things. But you actually see that those who are not following these regulative principles, what they are giving up is their intelligence, they're giving up their health, they're giving up any proper direction in life, you know, and they're completely bewildered, you know, like that. That's my experience, you know. So, if one follows the prescription given by Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita and Srila Prabhupada and all the Vaishnavacharyas, then actually one becomes very, very happy. You know? There was one Nigerian gentleman, he came to the temple, and he was quite a young person. I think he was in his mid-20s. And he had all the gold jewelry, and you know, he looked a bit like Will Smith. I don't know if any of you know Will Smith. So, and I was wondering, you know, because the way he was dressed and the way he was acting, I was thinking, you know, what's this type? What's he doing here? You know, like that. He doesn't seem like the kind of person that generally come for spiritual inquiry. You know, like that. So, he said to me that. His secretary, she's an Indian lady, and she works in his. He owns a big company. So what she did was she managed to get some of his products into the supermarkets. So that means it was a big contract for him. So he said to her, "Oh, whatever, if you want me to do anything, you know, as a thank you, I'll do that for you." So she said to him, well, I do want you to do something. I want you to go to the Hare Krishna temple, and I want you to take loads of your food ingredients and go and donate them there, and I want you to go and visit that temple. So normally, a person like that wouldn't be seen in the temple. You know? So anyway, I met him, and I was thinking, well, you know, he doesn't really seem the type, you know, but I said, okay, well, he's here now, so I'll try and be nice to him and show him around, you know. And so I took him around, showed him different places, Prabhupada's rooms, the deities, and the grounds. And then it was prasadam time, and he was eating. He had two plates of prasad, you know. And I was speaking to him, and he said, oh, this all seems very interesting. So I said to him, I said, you are an eternal spiritual being who have accepted a temporary material body, you know. He said, oh, no one's ever told me that before, you know. And I was speaking to him for quite a while, and he was asking a lot of questions, you know. So about then I was explaining a little bit about karma, you know. So he was saying that, oh, this, you know, this karma, I don't understand, it's difficult to understand, you know, like that, you know. I said, some people just say it's kind of mythical, it's like, you know, it's fairy tales, you know, like that, you know. Some people, they like to believe in it to make themselves feel good, you know, like that. You know? So then I said to him, I said, okay, I said, do you believe in the law of gravity? He said, oh yeah, I believe in the law of gravity. I said, okay. So I said, if I take you, let's say for argument's sake, if I take you to the top of a skyscraper building, and let's say for argument's sake that you don't happen to believe in gravity, if I push you off this building, will you float because you don't believe in gravity? He said, no, 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 I'll go down like a brick. And I said, really? Why is that? He said, oh, because gravity is a universal principle. It's acting on you all the time, whether you believe in it or not, you know, like that. So I said, oh, I said, very, very interesting. I said, you answered your own question. Because I said, just like gravity is a universal principle, it's acting upon us all the time, regardless of whether we believe in it or not. So similarly, the law of karma is acting upon us every single minute of the day, you know. And it doesn't mean that if we don't believe in it, that it's not acting upon us, you know. Like that. So there are so many universal principles that are acting upon us. People who are a little bit intelligent, they can make some inquiry to find out what these principles are and how they work. And then they can lead a life in such a way that it's not banging their head against the universal principles, you know. They said either you can accept the universal principles and abide by them, or you can smash your head against them, you know. You have two choices, you know. So he said, oh, well, he said, when you explain it that way, then it's different, you know, like that, you know. Because then, you know, he said, I can understand it's not just something that's made up, you know. And just like a child, you know, like a child, if he puts his hand in the fire won't think, oh, this is a child, I'll excuse him, you know, like that, you know. The child will also be burned. So the youth, Shri Shri Radha Gokulanandadi ki, Shri Shri Sitaram Lakshmananaman ki, Shri Shri Gauranitai ki, so these are kind of universal principles, and they're acting like, like some people, they believe in a philosophy of anarchy. Anarchy, that means that they can do whatever they want, and it's okay, you know, like that. Some people, they say, oh, why are you trying to tell me, you know, what to do and what not to do, you know? You know, I'm a free person, I can do whatever I want, you know, like that. You know, don't try and tell me, you know? So we say, well, there is some law and order in the universe, and if you abide by that, then you can lead a less complicated life, and you'll get less trouble, you know. There's more of an opportunity for you to be peaceful and happy. And they said, well, how can you explain that? I said, well, like in this country, there's something called the highway code, you know, which says that if you're driving, you should drive on the left, you know, like that. Not drive wherever you want, you know. And when you come to a traffic light, if it's red, then you should stop. And if there's a pedestrian or on a zebra crossing, you should let them go. So there are certain principles which are like a code, you know. And so if you abide by that code, then you have nothing to worry about, you know. You can avoid accidents, and you can avoid getting penalty points, and you can avoid your license being taken away, and you can dying in an accident, whatever. But if you accept the guidelines are there. But if you choose not to accept the guidelines, then you may think you're very clever, but actually very foolish, because if you drive on the wrong side of the road, then what will happen? You know? Or if you go through a red light, or you do so many things, you know. So there are laws of the government, you know. Like in this country, there are many laws, and if you abide by them, then you no one will bother you like that. Somebody who doesn't abide by the laws of the government, whenever there's a police siren, then he's always looking over his shoulder, he's always in anxiety, you know, like that, you know. He's thinking, oh, is it for me, you know? He's always like, you know, if there's a knock on the door, he said, oh, you know, have they come for me, you know? But somebody who is abiding by the laws, then he's not always in anxiety, because he knows that actually haven't done anything wrong, you know. So just like there are laws of the government, there are also laws of the universe which are put into place by the Supreme Lord and his representatives. So similarly, if we learn from scriptures like Srimad Bhagavatam, and we learn to abide by those laws, then we can lead a life that's progressive and is actually meaningful, and we can actually be happy. You know? Otherwise, we get into so much trouble. You know? I just wanted to. In this particular verse, there was it was talking about what is it called, celestial opulence, and then I was talking about intoxication, you know, like that, or drinking, you know. Like I explained earlier, I met quite a few people who were drunk, and although they were well educated and opulent in many ways, they couldn't do the basic things, and therefore it wasn't very advisable. So this is it's a little song by Narottam Das Thakur, and it's from it's called Ishtadev Vignapati. It's a prayer to one's beloved Lord from Prarthana. You know? And he says, Hari Hari Bifale Janama Gunayu Manusha Janama Paya Radha Krishna Na Bhajiya Janiya Shunya Bishai Kainu. So Bishai means poison, you know. So Nalakuvera and Manigriva were taking intoxication. And that's to be considered like poison, because you're poisoning your body. In fact, some people, they take so much alcohol that they actually get blood poisoning, you know. And some of them actually die, you know. Their liver becomes damaged or pickled, you know. Like that. So this one, Hari Hari Bifale Janama Gunayu. So he's singing, O Lord Hari, I have spent my life uselessly, having obtained a human birth and having not worshipped Radha and Krishna, I have knowingly drunk poison. So if we have the human form and we don't take the opportunity to take to the process of bhakti and worship Radha and Krishna, then knowingly we are drinking poison. Then he goes on to say, Go lokera prema dhana hari nama sankirtana Ratina janmilo kenetai samsara bishanale dibani shiha jale Judaete na koinu upai. Then he goes on to say that the treasure of divine love in Goloka Vrindavan has descended to as the congregational chanting of Lord Hari's holy names. And he says, why did my attraction for that chanting never come about? And he says, day and night my heart burns from the fire of the poison of worldliness, and I have not taken the means to relieve it. So the treasure, prema dhan, you know, people are looking for treasure, you know. Just the other day I found, there was in the news that there was I think in Africa somewhere, there was some church minister and he found a massive diamond, you know, like that. He was just digging somewhere and he found a massive diamond. So people are actually looking for treasure, you know, like that. But the treasures of this material world are very limited, you know. But the premadhan, that is the highest treasure, the treasure of divine love, is descending directly from Goloka Vrindavan. And what is that treasure of divine love? It is the congregational chanting of the Lord's holy names, you know. So we have been given that treasure, although sometimes we can kind of become complacent, you know, because we, you know, the treasure's there every day, you know, we can have it whenever we want, you know, and that. But there are so many living entities who have no idea what the real treasure is, you know, like that. And they end up chasing their own tails, you know. They end up chasing so many different things that actually don't give any happiness, you know. On that point, when I went to visit America, I was in Baltimore. My eldest sister lives there, and I went to see her. And her son, he's a very big doctor. He's a chief medical officer in a big company, you know. So he wasn't like interested much in Krishna consciousness. And so anyway, I was there, so I was speaking to him, you know. So he said, you know, I'm in number two position, you know, like that. After the owner of the company, I'm the next one in charge, you know, like that. So you know, he's got a very big house, he's got a good salary, he's got you know, nice family, he's got three children, his wife is also a doctor, you know, he's healthy, he's young, you know, he goes to the gym, he's got nice friends and things, you know. So he was saying, you know, why do I need to take to this Krishna consciousness? So I said to him, I said, would you accept that in life that you have to be balanced? He said, yeah, well, I would accept that, you know. So I said, well, you know, I said, I'm speaking to you, and I said, in many areas of your life, you're doing really, really well. You know, the boxes have got, they are very abundant, you know. They've got the ticks, you know. In your wealth, you know, your bank account is good, you know, your house is good, your family, so many other things, you know. I said, but there's one aspect of your life that seems like very depleted, you know. He said, oh, what aspect is that, you know? I said, the spiritual aspect, you know. He said, I said, well, you yourself said that to be balanced is good, you know, like that. So if you have something in all the boxes of your life, then it'll make you a balanced person. So then he said, well, why do I need to take to this spiritual things, you know? So I said, well, you know, your wealth, you know, your youth, you know, your bodily beauty, you know, like that, and your family members, and so many other things that you're enamored by and dependent upon now. I said, they may not always be there, you know, like that. He says, life is tottering like a drop of water on a lotus leaf. At any moment, it can fall off. Was it Jivana Talamala? How does it go? Yeah. So life is tottering like a drop of water on a lotus leaf. At any moment, it can fall off. You see? So I said to him, I said, you're doing okay now. I said, but as you grow older, you'll find actually, even with all these things, you won't be happy and you won't be satisfied because there'll be something that's missing, you know. Inside you will be hollow, you know. So then he was asking many questions and some of them were challenging questions. And so I was just trying to explain to him And then he agreed. He said, okay, you know, he said, give me something to read. Tell me, you know, where I can learn this stuff, you know. So he started asking some nice questions. So I gave him a nice book by Radhanath Maharaj to read. And then he's an intelligent man, you know. So I said to him that, you know, you work in this big company and your boss is he's very greedy. He's trying to drive the workers. He's trying to get as much kind of, he's trying to squeeze them to the max to get every last ounce of energy out of the workers, you know. So then I said, you have a lot of influence in this company. I said, why don't you try and make the lives of your workers in your company better? He said, well, why should I do that? I said, because a company is only as good as the workforce, you know. So if you treat your workers like dirt, then if they're not happy, how do you think they're going to treat their customers? You know? So he said, oh, I never thought about that, you know. I said, and also, whatever you do, it comes back to you, you know. So if you if you work empathically and if you have a large workforce, you can see, well, how can I get the best out of this workforce? If you treat them like people and you're kind to them, and instead of forcing them and pushing them, if you inspire them, if you encourage them, you know, like that, and you are like not always looking over their shoulder, then they'll do a lot better, you know. So he said, oh, okay. He said, it's an interesting concept, you know. So he wants to look into that concept and try. So there's just another couple of verses, and then we'll stop, and then if there's any criticisms or comments, they're welcome. Bhajanda Nandana Jay, Sachi Sutta Hoilo Se, Balaram Hoilo Nitai, Dinahina Jata Chilo, Hari Nam Udarilo, Tara Shakshi Jagai Madai. Lord Krishna, who is the son of the king of Raj, became the son of Sachi, Lord Chaitanya, and Balaram became Nitai. The holy name delivered all those souls who were lowly and wretched. The two sinners, Jagai and Madai, are evidence of this. And in this age, you know, we're all Jagai and Madai to some degree, especially me, you know, like that. So we need the mercy of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, otherwise we are no hopers, you know. Haha Prabhu Nanda Sutta, Brishabhanu Sutta Juta, Karuna Koro, Eibharo, Narottama Dase Koe, Na Telio Range Pai, Tomabina Ke Ache Amara. He said, O Lord Krishna, son of Nanda, accompanied by the daughter of Brishabhanu, please be merciful to me now. Narottam Das says, O Lord, please do not push me away from your reddish lotus feet, for you, for who is my beloved, except for you. So these songs and teachings of the Vaishnava Acharyas, they are the condensed nectar of all the Vedic teachings, you know, like that. So it's very nice to take the time to read them and to learn them and absorb one's consciousness in these songs and in these teachings, and this will make one very, very happy. Everyone is looking for happiness in this world, but some people are not finding it because they're looking in the wrong place. But we are very fortunate. We are here, assembled here by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada. If he hadn't have stepped onto the ship Jaladuta, I don't think all of us would be sitting here right now, you know, or even listening to Srimad Bhagavatam. So we have a lot of thanking to do and appreciation to do. And there's two things, you know. We have to learn how to be grateful, you know, like that. You know, of course, there's so many problems and different things that we could complain about, but we should learn about this gratitude. This gratitude is a very wonderful thing. And there's two things. You can either be grateful or you can be a great fool, you know, like that. So you can have one of the two. So if you're not grateful for everything that we've been given, then we're a great fool, you know, the mudha, you know. So I'll stop there. Thank you very much for your patience.